Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Chaf Ted Amud Bet, 7 lines from the bottom. Amar Rav Yosef, Hanei Tarte Mile, Amar Rav Besfarim. These two memorals we have from Rav with regards to Sifrei Torah, Betanya to Yuftei. The problem is that both of those memorals are refuted by a Braita. Chado, Hadam Arav, the first of which is, Rav says, Sefer Torah, Sheish Bo Shtei Tawiyot, Bechol Daf, V'daf, Yitakein. If you have a Sefer Torah, then every daf has two mistakes, worth fixing. Shalosh, got three mistakes there, Yiganez. Then you put it to Gneza, because it's already too problematic, both from the perspective of amount of work that has to be done to fix it, as well as how it will look after you fix all those mistakes that are there. Betanya to Yuftei, and the Braita that is problematic from is, Shalosh Yitakein, the Braita says that if there are three mistakes per daf, then you fix it. Arba Yiganez. If there are four, then you put it into Geniza. So the Braita allows for one more mistake per daf before we put it into Geniza. We're going to see in today's Gemara, a daf means a column. We have a Yiriyah, which is a stretch of cloth that is written on. On a Yiriyah, you have a number of dafim, and in each daf is made up of Shitot, which are the lines. Just background, because it's going to come up today in today's daf. So on that we say, Tano, if you find a single daf that's clean of seemingly mistakes, that will save the whole thing. Meaning that once you know that you have this daf there, then even no matter how many mistakes you have on the other dafim, you don't put it into Geniza, because you got something to work with. You got a whole daf to work with. Now, as the Tosfot says over here, but dafka miyikara. That obviously means that from the outset, it has to be a daf that's existing there. Meaning that if you can go back and write the whole daf again, then of course you don't have to put it in Geniza, because then you solve your problem by rewriting that whole daf or rewriting that whole yiriyah. This is a question: if you can't rewrite the whole daf, what's the story? So that's what it means, miyikara. From the outset, what is the issue? All right, so now, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta mishmei derav, Vehu dichtiv rubia de sifra shapir. That assumes that the majority of the sefer is fine. Which Rashi explains over here means that if you have that daf that's kshera, and now you have the robe, the sefer is kasher, which the Jetu Mekubetzet and Ot Chof explains means, rubia de sifra shapir, shirob kol daf katuv below taot. Majority of each individual column is written without mistakes in it. She'en yoter mishmona o shisha ta'ut b'chol daf v'daf. As long as there's not more than 8 or 6 or 4 mistakes on each page, meaning that there's a limited amount of mistakes. You can have more than 4 on every other page, but the majority of each column must be kasher in order for this to work. On the other hand, you can see here in the Masorah Shas, he points you to the Beit Yosef, who says Ruba the Sifra means the majority of the letters in the Sefer must be kasherim. So Rashi claims that the Ruba the Sifra means the robe of the dafim there have to be kasherim, whereas the Beit Yosef sees this more as a global view on the Sefer itself, that the letters themselves, the majority of letters, must be Ksherim over here. Amalei Abaye, the Rav Yosef, Eat Behu Ha'u Daf Shalosh Tayot, Mai. Going back to what Rav said before, that we have, if you find one of the Dafim Shlemim, that it's good, Matzela Del Kulo, what is the reference over there? Does that mean that you found 3 mistakes on that daf? And if you found 3 mistakes over there, then that's considered to be a clean daf, because that's a daf that you can keep. It's not beyond the number of mistakes that don't allow you to go and fix the daf. And that's Matzal Doklan. And since you have a right to fix it, it's as if it is kasher. Or do we say it has to be totally clean? I mean, it has to have no mistakes whatsoever. That's the question that we're asking. Amalei ho b'yitayiv litkunei mitkan. So he says, if you can fix it, then it can be fixed. Meaning that if it's plausible to fix it, that's the equivalent of having a daf that's clean. Svahane mile chaserot. That's only true when you're talking about missing items. Avayitayrot, leitlan ba. But if you have additional letters that are in there, that is not a problem. Chaserot my time alo. What's the reason by chaserot? Amravkana mishom demechse kiminumar. Because it starts to look like it is a mess. It looks like splotchy or striped. It looks like a tiger. The problem is that either you're going to have to erase in order to put in these letters. So as you erase and write, erase and write, you're going to get splotchy or patchy type of look to the cloth. If you've ever seen a Sefer Torah that has the cloth erased, you can see that it's thinned out over there. It's a different color than the remainder of the cloth. If you have to do this numerous times, it's going to make it into Menumar. By the case of the Yitzeirot, you don't have this problem, because Yitzeirot, you could just erase and leave blank. There's nothing to fill in there anymore. Or the problem is that you're going to put in the letters like with a carrot, and you're going to put them in between the lines or in between the letters. You're going to try to fit them in, and that's going to make it minumar. That's going to make it all splotchy or uneven because of that. as Rashi says here, Mefsek Minumar Shekotevu Magia Boashitim Emashachiser. Rashi says that if you fix it in the lines, then it's going to look Minumar, because you have to erase it and write over it. Or if you see here in the Mesorah Shas, it says Benashitim, which is the other option, which is you put it like almost like a carrot, and you put the letters or the words up above. So that's the problem in Numar, which is either you're going to have to hang letters because they're missing, or you're going to have to erase significant amounts to go fill in the missing letters, and then you have to write over that area. It's going to leave you these splotchy blanks. Whereas the Yeterot, you just do a little scraping off, and you get rid of it, and everything is fine. Agra Chamua de Rabbi Avo. So Agra was the father-in-law of Rabbi Avo. Avale Yeterot b'sifrei. He had extra letters in his sefer. Ata lekamei de Rabbi Abba. So he came before Rabbi Abba to see what to do with it. Amr lei lo amran el bechaserot. He says the only problem with the sefer is if they're missing. Aval yitzerot leit lan ba. When you have additional letters, there's no problem. As Rashi says here, ela goran. You just scrape them off. The Baal Tosafot bring here a conclusion that is noted by some of the mefarshim, and he says it's completely wrong. He says yesh toim she. When they have a doubt as to a word, imleya imchasera, certain words we don't know if they should be written imleya or chasera. So simotan imleya. They say better off to do it imleya than chasera. Mishum diyeterot late lamba. The Gemara here said, oh, extra letters are no problem. So you see how they read the Gemara. They didn't read the Gemara that the extra letters are there. Erase them, they're no problem. They mean extra letters are there, they're no problem at all. The way the Rishonim will explain this way, say, Kol Yetera Kamandaleta Dami. That we had that sugya in Zvachim, that it's Kamandaleta Dami. It's as if it doesn't exist. So what you do is you put in the extra letters, and it's not a problem. And they think that that Yeterot Leit Lamban, it's not a problem. That's the way to solve the problem. He says, V'lav Milti, Dacha Mayr B'Yeterot Shugararan. It's clear here that the extra letters are being scraped off. The law Amrina, the Mechse, Kiminumar. And we don't say it looks like Minumar. If, of course, you can leave the extra letters there, then there's no question of Minumar. The difference between Minumar by the Chaserot and the Yeterot, he's saying that the erasing of the small amount of letters or not hanging them between the lines, that's not Minumar. But that implies that you have to do something. You can't just leave the letters in there and say, oh, no, Yeterot aren't a problem. That Tosfot sees as not being a solution, but he's clearly responding to this view within the Rishonim that extra letters aren't a problem at all, and that's how we'll solve all our spekot with regards to Yeterot and Chaserot. Idach, the other member of Rav, remember this is how we started here, the Rav Yossi says there were two Milei D'Rav, and both of them are refuted by a Braita. This is the second Milei D'Rav, the Marav, Oktev Sefer Torah, Baligmor, person writes the Sefer Torah, is coming to finish the Sefer Torah, Gomer Afilu Be'emtza Daf. You can finish off, even in the middle of a Daf. Meitavei, is that really true? Hakotev Sefer Torah, Balo Ligmor, Lo Igmor Be'emtza Daf, Keder Shugomer Be'chumashim. You're not allowed to end in the middle of a daf like you do with Chumashim. Ela mekatzer v'olech ad sof daf. You need to narrow it till you get to the bottom of the daf. Rashi has a picture of that over here, which is that you start to narrow the lines until you get down to the bottom of the daf, because in that way, you ensure you get to the bottom of the daf by shrinking the lines down. But it's clear from the Braita that the optimal way, or maybe the only way to read a Sefer Torah, is to end at the bottom of a daf. You can't end in the middle of a daf. So Rav is saying, oops, end in the middle of a daf. And a Braita that says you can't end in the middle of the daf. The Braita does allow you to end in the middle of the daf with regards to Chumashim. Now Chumashim, in general in the Gemara, are not like today when we speak about a Chumash, which is a printed Chumash. It's also not a Chumash that is within a Sefer Torah. It's a single Chumash that was written like a Sefer Torah, but it's not written with all five Chumashim together. So that's the concept of Chumash here. We're going to see that play out in the Gemara now. So the Gemara answers, Ki Gamara b'Chumashim. When Rav said it, he meant the Chumashim. The Gemara says, Vaha Sefer Torah Ka'amar. He said Sefer Torah, can't be speaking about Chumashim. Again, here you see that distinction. A Sefer Torah has written with certain rules we're going to see today. And those rules include that you have all five of the Chumashim together. A Chumash is written with, they're slightly different rules, but it's written with those rules, but you only have one Chumash. You only have Breshit, you only have Shmot, you only have a Vayikra inside of a rolled cloth, the way that we have the cloth for the Nevi'im. It's just they do that for the Chumashim. So the Gemara says, that's what Rav was speaking about. The Gemara says, you can't say that because Rav said Sefer Torah. When you say Sefer Torah, it means all of the Chumashim together. So the Gemara answers, Chumashim shall Sefer Torah. What Rav was speaking about was not the end of the Sefer Torah. He's speaking about the other four Chumashim. When they end in the Sefer Torah, they can end in the middle of a daf, which is the way that we actually have it. that Breishit, Shmot, Vayikra, and Bamidbar end in the middle of a daf, and then you start the next sefer, you drop a couple lines, and you start the next sefer. As opposed to Devarim, which the Braita is indicating you need to finish at the bottom of a daf, as opposed to what it seemed that Rav said was that you can do that even in the middle of a daf. Ini, is that really true? Amar Rabbi Shua Amar Abba Amar Rav Gido Amar Rav Leinei Kol Yisrael Be'emtza Adaf. So here, Leinei Kol Yisrael doesn't leave you any choice. That's clearly the end of Sefer Dvarim. And he's saying that you can do that Be'emtza Adaf. Hai Be'emtza Shita Yitmar. No, no, he didn't mean at the middle of a daf. He meant in the middle of the line. The Rav meant you have to finish at the bottom of the daf like we saw in the Braita, but you finish in the middle of the line. You don't finish at the end of the line. It's not the end of the daf, the end of the line. It's the end of the daf, but the middle of the line. Rabbanan Amre, af be'emtza shita. Even in the middle of a shita. Over here you have a machlok between Rashi and the Shita Mekubetzet, how to read this. Rashi says here, af, what's the af referencing to? Means also in the middle of a shita. That means you're allowed to do something else, plus you're allowed to end in the middle of a shita. So Rashi says, af be'emtza shita, u be'emtza daf. You can do both. You can finish in the middle of a line, and also in the middle of a daf. You can see if you look in Otet of the Shita Mekubetzet, he says that's not what it meant, af. When they said af, it meant ubichinam perushkein. Rashi said that unnecessarily. Elanir lefresh af bemsa shita, vehu adin besofa shita. Af means that you could do it at the end of the line, or af, even if you do it in the middle of the line, that's okay. So they read the af as referencing to the other possibility, which is ending at the end of the line. So af means not only at the end of the line, but even in the middle of the line. Rashi reads, it's a given that it's got to be in the middle. So af b'shita means not only can you finish in the middle of the page, the middle of the daf, the column, you can also finish in the middle of the line that you're in. That's the Rabbanan view. Then Rav Ashi amar b'emtza shita dafka. So Rav Ashi says that it must be at the middle of the line. So as opposed to the Rabbanan, and this really is more supportive of the view of the Shita Mekubetzet, that Rav Ashi is saying you must be in the middle of the line. The Rabbanan is saying, af, you can also do it in the middle, implying that you could do it at the end of the line, but the middle of the line is equally good, and that means Rav Ashi and they are arguing, and that's what the Shita Mekubetzet indicates, is that they're arguing about where on the line you have to end. The Rabbanan said, it doesn't matter. Wherever you land on the line, it's fine. Rav Ashi is saying, you must end in the middle of the line, and that's how they explain the Machloket. According to Rashi, the Rabbanan and Nardo is saying that in the middle of the line, seems like they agree about that point, but the issue is about the Emsa Adaf. Rabbanan is saying Emsa Adaf, and then when he says Be Emsa Shita Dafka, Velo Be Emsa Adaf, Rashi says. That's their argument. So Rashi says the argument is about the Daf. Where on the Daf? Is that the Chachamim say middle of the line and middle of the Daf? Rashi says middle of the line, end of the Daf. According to Rashi, that's the Machloket about where on the Daf it is. According to the Shita Mekubetzet, that's a given it's at the end of the Daf. Their only question is about the Shita. Rabbanan say you can end at the end of the line or the middle of the line, and Rabashi say you can only end in the middle of the line. You can also see that in the Odalef of the Shita Mekubetzet, he says, when it says daf, go l'olam b'sof. He says, I have to be at the end of the daf. Fikach enak pid b'riyah chrona. Therefore, the last yiriyah, the last klaf, imho pachot migimol dafim. In general, we're going to see this in a couple moments, that the yiriyot have to contain a minimum of three columns in them. So the last daf, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about that, so you can actually fulfill this, which is the only way to get it to be at the end of a daf. And the middle of a line may be that the last yiriyah does not have three columns in it. And he says that we're not makbid on that, and we'll see that actually in the Gemara as well. And the Gemara says, the halacha is v'emtza shita dafka. And it must be in the middle of the line. We always end at Leinei Kol Yisrael, not at the end of a line, but in the middle of the line. And then, according to the way the Shita Mekubetzet means it's a given that's at the Sofa Daf. And Rashi also, who thinks that when Rav Ashi, who the Gemara's passing like, said Emsa Shita, he meant Emsa Shita u b'Sofa Daf. And so therefore, it's the middle of the line and the end of the Daf, according to Rav Ashi. So, Amar Rav Yeshua Bar Ava, Amar Rav Gido Amar Rav, Shmona Psukim Shibetorah, the last eight psukim of the Torah, Yechid korea utam b'beit haKnesset. Yechid can read them in the Beit haKnesset. We saw this back in the Gemara in Baba Batra. We'll see a little bit more over here and then go back and discuss how the Rishonim deal with this. Keman, who is the author of this position? The local Rabbi Shimon. It's clearly not like Rabbi Shimon. The Tanya, Vayamat Shem Moshe Eved Hashem. Efshem Moshe Chai. The Kadav Vayamat Shem Moshe. How can it be Moshe's writing that he's dead when he's standing there and he's alive and he's writing? He can't be writing that. Ella, Ad kan katab Moshe, miakan melech katab Yeshua bin Nun, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no problem. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah until the last 8 psukim. And then from Vayomatcha Moshe and onwards, that's written by Yehuda bin Nun. And then that would, in a sense, explain what's going on here. Why is there a different din with regards to the last 8 psukim? The answer is because they're not written by Moshe Rabbeinu, they're written by Yehoshua bin Nun. The Amar Lo Rabbi Nechemia, and some attribute that position to Rabbi Nechemia. Amar Lo Rabbi Shimon, Efshar, Sefer Torah Chaser Otachat. How is it possible that the Sefer Torah is missing a single letter that wasn't given by Moshe Rabbeinu, not heard from Hashem? Bechtiv, and it says, this week's Parsha, Lakoach has the Sefer Torah Zeh, V'samtem Otao Mitzad Aron Brit Hashem Elokechem, V'yasham Mechaleid. Moshe Rabbeinu takes the Sefer Torah, hands it over to Shevet Levi, and tells them to put it into the Aron. So he's handing them a full Sefer Torah. It's not like they went afterwards and filled in the rest. He gave them a whole Sefer Torah. If he has a whole Sefer Torah, then you can't claim that Yeshua wrote the last 8 psukim. Elad kan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Umoshe Kutev. Until this point in time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking and telling Moshe, and Moshe is writing. Now we have an our girsa here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Umoshe Kutev Omer. The other girsa, you can see that on the side, is Omer V'Kutev, which seems to be a better girsa. Elad kan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Umoshe Omer V'Kutev. Moshe repeats it and then writes it down. There is a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether that Omer belongs there. We'll get back to that in 1 second. Mikam Elach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Umoshe Kutev. From there forward, Hashem's telling Moshe, dictating to Moshe, and Moshe is writing bedema. Now, the simple translation of bedema means with tears. Kama shenemar lahalan. Because that's what it says further on. I mean, this is what it says in the Navi Yirmiyahu. Vayomer lahem baruch mipiv. Yikrai et kol hadvarim haele. Vani kotev al hasefer bedyo. Yirmiyahu and Navi, after he'd written Sefer Eicha, he sends his right-hand man, Baruch ben Neriah, to read it to the men of the king, and that's because Yirmiyahu at this point is incarcerated, and he's hoping that this will spur some tshuva movement amongst the ministers of the king and the king himself. And when Baruch, after the ministers have heard it, this is the pasuk that's written, which is explaining, how did you get a hold of this? And he says that the word of Hashem came to Yirmiyahu, he had a nevuah, Balem Baruch, Mipiv Yikra, Eli, he got the nevuah, and then he would read it over to me, at Kodvari Ma'ila, everything that's written in this sefer, Vani Kodeva Le Sefer Badio, and I'm writing on the sefer in ink, meaning that I was transcribing that which Yirmiyahu was saying over in his nevuah. The truth is that in that perek, Perek Lamed Vav, it actually describes 3 times the writing of the sefer, once in the beginning when they actually write it, the second time, which is what we're speaking about here, when he's conveying to them how he got a hold of it, and then there's a third time after the king rips up and burns the Sefer Megillah, the Megillah Teicha, then Hashem comes to Yirmiyahu and tells him to write it again. And we have another pasuk that's similar in this nature, where again he dictates to Baruch ben Neriah to write down that which he had said before, plus additional items that he adds on over there. Question is, what is the proof that's brought from Sefer Yirmiyahu? So Rashi's girsa in the Gemara over here is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer, Moshe Omer Acharav. Moshe repeats after him, Kadesh lo yiteh b'ktav, so he won't make any mistakes, v'kotev, and then he writes, mikan ve'elech, from there to forward, Moshe kotev b'dema, v'lo haya omer acharav mimov tzaro. He does not repeat after God. So Rashi sees the difference in the psukim, according to Rabbi Shimon, is that before this point, that God would dictate, Moshe would repeat the dictation, and then write it down. For the last 8, Moshe does not repeat the dictation, because it's too painful for him. Then the proof from Yirmiyahu is, that Baruch ben Neriah is transcribing that which Yirmiyahu was saying over in his nevuah. But we don't see him repeating it. He's just writing based on the dictation of Yirmiyahu. That's the proof here. He didn't repeat after him because it's too painful for him. So that's the way Rashi reads the Gemara. The Baal HaTos would say this leads to a major chumrah for Sofrim. He says, Umyesh Sfarim Degarsi Moshe Omer Vikotev, Vichumrohi, the Kotvei Sefer Torah Muzuzat Tfilin. That's a huge Chumrah on those that are kotvei stam. That means that they have to repeat out loud everything that they are writing. It's not enough that either someone dictates to them, they're reading out of a sefer, they actually have to say it out loud before they write. That's the way Rashi is reading. It says, Bukuntris nami garis omer bekotevu peish tam. And he explains the reason why. So according to Rashi, it says that he has to repeat the dictation. And the proof from Yirmiyahu is that Baruch is not repeating that which Yirmiyahu is telling him. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot view that the simple reading of the text is that Hashem's dictating to Moshe, and Moshe is writing. The proof from Yirmiyahu is that's how you write, meaning that someone dictates and you write. The person who's writing is not questioning what's being written. They're not the determinant what's written. They're almost like just a copier, their scribe that's writing it down. So do Baruch just writing after whatever human Yirmiyahu dictates to him. Same thing. Moshe is just writing what Hashem dictates to him. And yes, Vayamat Moshe, he's writing about it because that's what God dictated to him. He's not writing a fact about himself. He's writing what Hashem dictated to him to write. That's the way the Tosfot would read it. But obviously the Nafkamino is significant because it has a lot of ramifications for the Sofer. As the Sofer, when they are writing, they have to for sure have another text in front of them. But do they have to then read out loud the text before they write? That's a question. Rashi says, yes, they're going to have to read it out loud. They have to say it out loud before they write it. Balei Tosfot would say that's a chumra yetera. It's an extra chumra that you'd have to repeat. Equivalent of repeating what Hashem dictated to you. What's being dictated to you, you don't have to say out loud. It's interesting only because reading it sometimes does not get you the desired results because it's kriya k'tiv. So you'd have to read it in a way that's like the k'tiv so that you make the right adjustments for that. And it's actually a machloket achronim as to whether you read it b'kriya or b'k'tiv. That might relate to another machloket, which is the Shulchan Aruch paskins that you can read it from the Ktav. You don't need to read it out loud. On the other hand, the Bach believes that you have to read it out loud because that's what imbues the Sefer Torah with the Kedusha when you read it out loud. And then, if you think about it in that way, if you're trying to imbue it with the Kedusha, then how you read it doesn't matter in terms of making mistakes or Ktiv. It could be Kri would be the way to imbue it with the Kedusha. And then Rashi's reasoning, which is you have to read it out loud in order to prevent mistakes, then it would be more important to read it like the k'tiv. And that might actually explain the machloket achronim as to whether you read it b'kri or b'k'tiv when the sofer reads it while he's writing it. So then the Gemara says, Salema delok Rabbi Shimon. So let's say this is not like Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon, the whole Torah is written by Moshe Rabbeinu. There's no difference between the eight psukim and the rest of the Torah. Where it says, Afilu tem Rabbi Shimon, b'shtane yishtane. Even according to Rabbi Shimon, it may not be the difference between Moshe and Yeshua writing it. But even within Moshe Rabbeinu's writing, there's a difference between what happened before and what happened afterwards. Meaning that there's a distinction in the type of writing for those last eight psukim. So now, let's just go back and say that the halacha that was dictated here is that for the last eight psukim, Yachid Korei Otan. That's all we have in the Gemara. Rashi claims Yachid Korei Otan means you can't divide them up. They have to be read as a block, a single block. You can't have two aliyot that break up those last eight psukim. They have to be read as a single aliyah. Tosafot bring in Baba Batra, first of all, Rabbeinu Tam seconds this view of Rashi, that it means Yachid Korei Otan, means a single person reads them. The Shita Mekubetzet in Baba Batra enhances that and says that you can't actually read these psukim together with the other psukim that come before it, because then you'd be mixing that was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, that was written by Yoshua. And then he brings a second interpretation from the Rimi Gash, that said that those psukim have to be read with the remaining psukim beforehand, and you can't stop right before those psukim to indicate that Torah Moshe is Shlema, that there's nothing missing, and everything here is part of Torah Moshe, and there's no distinction about these psukim, and therefore you have to read psukim coming into this, plus the psukim that end off the Sefer Torah. And then the Mordechai here in Menachot indicates, Anishamati Yachid Talmid Chochem. Yachid Korei Otan means that you call up the biggest person in the shul, you call up the Talmid Chochem for the Aliyah, that's the appropriate person to get this aliyah, that is the conclusion of the Sefer Torah. So now the Balei Tosfot, on the other hand, brings from the Rabbeinu Meshulam. Rabbeinu Meshulam, I am a Faresh, the Mutesh, lo yikra shatz imo. So the difference in here is there a Baal Koreh? For the rest of the Torah, you have a Baal Koreh. For these last eight psukim, whoever gets the aliyah has to read it themselves. They can't read it with the Baal Koreh. For Kashel Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Tam says, I don't understand. The idea of a Baal Koreh is a very late addition. In that the way that the Gemara notes in the Megillah, whoever gets the Aliyah is the one who's Koreh B'Torah. He reads the Aliyah that he gets. The addition of the Baal Koreh, and the Balei Tosfot not here, but in other places expand on this heavily, is that it's similar to Mikra Bikurim. It's similar to the Bracha of Erusin at the Kiddushin, which is that people didn't know how to do it and it was embarrassing. And so therefore then they appointed a single individual to do it. And it's the same thing with the Baal Koreh. That was to prevent embarrassment for people who didn't know how to read. So he says that it's hard to understand the Rabbeinu Shulam's statement here because he's taking something that's written in the Gemara in a time period where there was no Baal Koreh, and he's saying, oh, that's the difference. Whether you have a Baal Koreh, don't have a Baal Koreh. Nobody had a Baal Koreh back then. So it doesn't make so much sense. That's why the Rabbeinu Tam rejects it, and he says, "Kein ikar kamo perish akuntris." So that's like Rashi says, "Lafuke shalei karu zechazeh," that you can't break up these eight psukim. So that's the way that the Bali Tosafot, the Rashi, you learn over here. The Rambam brings the fact, and it's a very difficult Rambam. The Rambam says, "Yachid koreu ta means afilu pachot ne'asara." Takes it literally. You don't have to read them, but Tzibor. Tzibor, you need to read the rest of the Torah. The last eight psukim, you don't have to read them, but Tzibor. That's what the Gemara said. Yachid koreu ta. Even an individual can read them. The Ravid is taken aback. He says, first of all, where do you ever find such a thing? And he plays on the words. He says, "Vat Tzibor eichan alchu." Where did the Tzibor go? They all walked out all of a sudden for that last Aliyah. Where is the Tzibor? You can't take out the Torah to read the rest of the Torah without the Tzibor. How come the Tzibor disappeared for those last eight psukim? The Ravid criticizes heavily the Rambam's view, and he seems to indicate, like Rashi, that Yachid Korotam, he says, the Minagag by us is that we don't break them up. That only a single individual reads them. We don't break them up into different Aliyot. Garach over here questions that view of the Rambam as to why should this be any different than a Dover Shibikdusha that requires a Sarah to be read with it? And the Chiddushe agrees in Sefer Menachot. So Sefer Nefesh HaRavi also quotes this idea that the difference between them is that until this point in the Torah, when Moshe Rabbeinu receives the messaging or the Torah from Kodesh Baruch Hu, he's receiving it as a Navi, and then he's writing it down as a Navi. On the last eight psukim, he's no longer a Navi for those psukim. He's writing over that which is being dictated to him by Hashem. And he's not classified as a Navi for those eight psukim. God told him what to write, and he wrote it down like a scribe rather than being a Navi. Then he adds into this the difference that the Reb Chaim makes with regards to what is considered to be a nevuah. A nevuah is shumra ba'alpeh. V'achar kach haya Navi kotev nevuato. The difference between Nevi'im and Ketuvim is the question of how it's conveyed. Nevi'im convey their nevuah ba'al peh. They articulate it, and then only afterwards they write it down. The writing is secondary to the articulation. Whereas by the Ketuvim, the primary purpose is to be written down, and therefore there's no need for articulation. And that's a similar concept to the distinction that the Griz, is trying to make over here. And then after resting that supposition, in the end he comes to the conclusion that Ubezen nearly a sheva braita, nearly a Torah yela beit dinim. There's two dinim in the Torah, din amira v'din ktiva. There's an articulation and a writing. Avalchet psukim shel Torah lo yelam din amira rak din ktiva lachud. They only have this din of being written down, not being articulated. Maybe independent of the issue of nevuah because of the questions that he has, but nevertheless there is something that's distinct about this part of the Torah that is qualitatively different than that which is written in the remainder of the Torah. That's what leads to the distinction halachically for these last eight psukim. The issue that comes up, it's brought up, interesting enough, by two people you would never assume would say the same thing, brought up by the Eben Ezra and the Chasam Sofer. Both of them make the same comment, which is that the pasuk is by Yal Moshe. Moshe went up the mountain. So they're trying to figure out, if Moshe went up the mountain, then how do you have the situation in which Moshe is writing the Sefer Torah? He gave the Sefer Torah to Shevet Levi. He's already up at the top of the mountain. How is he giving them the Sefer Torah? There is a suggestion that Moshe wrote the Torah and left it there, and they went up afterwards to find Moshe, and they found the Sefer Torah. He says it doesn't work, because it says there, Moshe gave it to them, to Shevet Levi. So he handed them a complete Sefer Torah. The Chatzim Sofer leaves it as the Tzarech Iyun, and the Eben Ezra just says, V'ya da'atik mizeh pasuk katov Yoshua, that even starting from Yal Moshe, which is four psukim earlier in that perek, that Yoshua ben Nun already started to write. That's what the Eben Ezra says. Disregarding almost this Gemara, the Eben Ezra says this in a number of psukim in the Torah, that they were what's called tikkunei sofrim. They were added later on. They were not written by Moshe Rabbeinu. He has much more free hand about that. He speaks about it, for instance, by another place where it says, Ad Yom Hazeh, until today. The Eben Ezra is much looser with that and says that those might have been added later, or those are tikkunei sofrim. So he has additional psukim that are not written by Moshe Rabbeinu, not these eight psukim. The Sefer Kolbo brings basically a compromised position by saying that the eight psukim are not the eight that we think. Rather, the shmona psukim is over seder shem b'yal Moshe ad v'Yoshua. They're the first eight psukim in that perek. The last four psukim that start from Yoshua ben Nun and onwards to the end of the Sefer Torah are written by Moshe Rabbeinu. And eight psukim start from b'yal Moshe. So he solves the problem by starting the eight psukim earlier, ending them earlier, so it captures b'yal Moshe and b'yal Ma'asham Moshe. But it does not then run into the problem of the Eben Ezra, which is it's including many more than the eight psukim that are mentioned by the Gemara. Although the Rabbeinu B'chaya takes a very strong position, that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote everything in the Torah, and the fact that he's writing about his death is not so problematic, because he's giving predictions about the future, like many things that he speaks about the future, and he doesn't feel that there's any difficulty with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote that down. And the Or HaChaim also comes out strongly against this view of the Ibn Ezra, or this idea that there are parts of the Torah that are not written by Moshe Rabbeinu, because it leads to kfirah, it leads to people having a difficulty with understanding the integrity of the Torah. So that leads many of the Mefarshim to try to deal with this problem in a slightly different manner. The Yad Ramah in Baba Batra gives what the simple interpretation of what this would be was, that the last psukim are nichtav bedema, that he wrote them with tears, that they're written in bedema while he is crying, and the Ritva in Baba Batra adds on, not only what that means, that he wrote them while he was crying, but literally that he wrote them bedema, that he wrote them with tears rather than with dio. Chatam Sofer, the Sfat Emet, and the Gra all make this similar point about the writing of bedema. What does it mean that he wrote bedema? It's a famous piece of the Gra. That kotei bedema means that the Sefer Torah is made up of letters, and when it's given in letters, they're not necessarily divided into words. This is the background for all of those Meimada Nosaf, those people that do the computer-generated searches in the Torah, that they combine letters and they look at things as big blocks rather than separate words. That's because the Torah is given in letters, just formed together, and then they separate them out into words. And so what they suggest is, bedema does not mean tears, but rather bedema means dimua, a mixture. And that is the rest of the Sefer Torah Moshe Rabbeinu wrote with the words separated out already. Hashem already guided him how to separate the words. For those last parts, he wrote, they had the letters. It was all written, but the words were yet to be divided out into what they will form into the words. So it was written in a block rather than in the separated words. The Chacham Tzvi questions why you would give the last eight psukim to the Talmud Chacham, to someone special, if in one sense they have a degraded status, because either Moshe Rabbeinu wrote them differently, or because Yeshua Ben Nun wrote them differently. And therefore he says, Venu Arot, Noagim Likro Lachatan Torah L'Asher Yashar Beinehem, Acham Yehu Sachal, Im Da'al Im Ashir, V'vad Shidar Nidarim Nidavot Aruyot. Whatever he needs to promise, whatever he needs to pledge in order to get it, they call anyone. And that makes sense because these last psukim aren't as significant as the other psukim. Then the Arot Devash takes issue with that and says that's just not true. But rather that there are unique brachot that are said on this aliyah because it's the end of the Sefer Torah. And therefore it's appropriate to give it to the Talmud Chacham so that he will get these additional brachot that are associated with this aliyah. Unlike the way they did it in the time of the Chachamim where they'd make a bracha in the beginning of all the aliyot, and one at the end. Over here, they added additional brachot to segregate this separately, and because of those additional brachot, it was appropriate to give it to the Talmud Chacham. Interestingly, the Shulch Shevet Yaibutz connects the question of the Tanaim here as to how those last eight psukim are written to another machloket Tanaim that we find as to whether the Torah was given Megillah Megillah or Chatumah Nitna. And he thinks there's a parallel between this machloket and the way that the Torah was given. Because according to one who says the Torah was given in its wholeness, how could it be that there was anything missing from the Sefer Torah? So there must have been something that was written there. On the other hand, the one who believes that each one is given as a separate Megillah, then there's less issue because you can then segregate out pieces and have each piece be given as a Megillah. In all those situations, there is something clearly different about these Psukim, but what they're trying to avoid is the problem that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't write the whole Sefer Torah. So they're trying to create a distinction that doesn't really make it that Moshe didn't finish off the Torah, because of the danger of assuming that Yoshua Ben Nun wrote the last eight psukim. Also, now you're casting aspersions on Torah Moshe, which is a dangerous thing to do. In the past, I've suggested maybe that there is something powerful about the fact that Yoshua Ben Nun writes the last eight psukim, because that speaks to the capacity of every Jew to be a part and parcel of the Torah. Yes, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah, and he wrote everything, it's all Torah Moshe, but the fact that Yoshua Ben Nun's psukim are contained in Torah Moshe shows you that even after the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, we are part and parcel of the Torah and the development of Torah, obviously much more so in Torah Shebaal Peh, but the fact that Torah Shebaal Peh incorporates Yoshua's writing as if it is Torah Moshe is significant in indicating that fact that we are partners in a sense of being Mamshich, that which happened at Sinai, and partners in the interpretation and the Mesorah of the Torah. This idea that I'm suggesting is somewhat backed up by the Ramban at the end of Parashat Vayelech, where he says, Al derech pshat, the Moshe v'Yoshua shnei mitzaveh sheyichtavua. that they were both commanded to write it. Ki ratzala sod Yoshua nevi'o b'chayei Moshe. He wanted to give Yoshua the chance to be a Navi in the lifetime of Moshe. B'nei Moshe kadva, Yoshua made him over korev ro'eh. He's standing with him and he's reading it and seeing it. And I'm taking it one step further, which is, even though Moshe was writing it over here, according to Ramban, Moshe was writing, but Yeshua wrote a portion of it. And like he says, Yeshua was also commanded to write it. And he wrote those portions, but that then gives significance to Yeshua's leadership within the context of Torah Moshe, which has both implications for Yeshua, samchut, or the authority of Yeshua, but also to the fact that it comes to indicate to us the incorporation of all of us within the world of Torah Moshe. What's interesting here is the Baal Tosfot, speaker of Sunday, we just did a couple of hours ago, Shabbat afternoon at Mincha time, we always read Tzidkat Tuchat Tzedek. So the reason supposedly for that is that it's a Tzidduk Adin, because Moshe Rabbeinu passed away on Shabbat afternoon, and therefore we give it Tzidduk Adin. So he says, Mashno Gimel Amar Tzidduk Adin v'Shabbat Mincha Perish from Shar Shalom Gaon, Ashniftar Moshe Rabbeinu Boto Shah. So they don't have Torah there because you're supposed to be batel mi batei midrashot. When a Talmud Chacham dies, when he passes away, everybody goes out to be malaveh and they close down all the batei midrashot. Din b'Shabbat meit katav ayom me'erev Shabbat. So Tosfot starts to run into a problem. If Moshe died on Shabbat, now you run into even a bigger problem. Forget about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is writing Vayamat Sham Moshe. In this week's parsha Vayelech, it says, I am me'erev esrim shana anochi ayom. I am 120 years old today. He wasn't 120 years old today because it was Shabbat when he was 120 years old because he died on the day that he was born. That means he's writing on Erev Shabbat. The Tosfot is raising is then you now open up this possibility that Moshe is not only writing other things about the future, but there he's also writing about that today is the 120th day of my life and it's not the 120th day of his life. So now you're really running into a bigger problem. But yesh l'tmoa dichtev alei atid. How is he going to write in the future? Rabbi Shimon lo by the memer, the pasuk nemer la'atid. Rabbi Shimon over here is not willing to entertain the possibility that Moshe can write about the future. If you're telling me he can write on Erev Shabbat about dying on Shabbat, why can't he say Vayamat Moshe also about Moshe's death before he died? It's writing about the future. So Mekashle ma'adichtiv lakoach and sefer Torah zeh Shema Hashim shatid Yeshua la'ashlimo. He says maybe because Yeshua was going to finish it off, and therefore that was okay for him to do that. Vod kasha. The Sefer Olam Mashma de Beshiva Adar mate Moshe. That's the Mesorah that we have, that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar. And then he does the calculation based on Sefer Olam Rabba, and that they were encircling Yericho after Pesach of that year. That means they started on the 22nd of Nisan. That means that the 28th of Nisan was a Shabbat. If that's the case, then Zayin Adar in that year was on Erev Shabbat. It doesn't work out. The whole kunz here is that he died on Shabbat. He says, it's just not true. Based on the calculation of Sefer Olam Rabba, it turns out he died. It's Shiva Badar, and the 7th of Adar was actually an Erev Shabbat. So you have to take your pick, which pill you're going to swallow. Either it's the Zayin Adar pill, which says that based on the calculation of Sefer Olam Rabba, he died on Erev Shabbat. But then you have a problem with Tzidduk Adin. Why do we do Tzidduk Adin on Shabbat? Or if you're going to subscribe to the Tzidduk Adin being on Shabbat, then you run yourself into the problem of how did he write Hayom? When it's saying that Me'av Esrim Shana Anochi Hayom, how does he write that? Because that's about the Atid. So you're stuck almost in a bind here, but I had to deal with this issue with Moshe Rabbeinu. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yeshua Bar Abba, Amar Rav Gido, Amar Rav, Lokeach Sefer Torah min Ashuk. Someone who purchases a Sefer Torah min Ashuk, Kechotef Mitzvah min Ashuk. It's like he's grabbing or stealing away a mitzvah from the Shuk. Katvo, if he writes it, Male Alav HaKetuv Kilu Kiblo Mehar Sinai. So this is what we spoke about before, that he actually writes it as if he received it from Har Sinai. So Amar Rav Sheshet Imigia Afilu Otachat Male Alav Kilu Katavo. If you fix one letter in it, it's considered as if he wrote it himself. So let's work our way backwards from these items. The last one is Rashi says here the reason that that's considered as if you wrote the Torah is because it's illegal to keep a Sefer Torah in a mugeh around. You're not allowed to keep a Sefer Torah that's problematic around. You need to fix the Sefer Torah that is problematic for obvious reasons. You don't want people learning from a Sefer Torah that's problematic. You don't want people copying. Because once you have a mistake, the mistake becomes permanent if you don't deal with the mistake. So that's the reason that if you fix a mistake, therefore it's considered as if you wrote the Torah, because you're taking it from being pasul, or a Sefer Torah that's illegal to keep around, to make something that is now a usable Sefer Torah. You've changed the status of the Torah, which is significant. That's the understanding that Rashi gives to this piece. This is also part of what was the big movement. I think the Lubavitcher Rebbe really started this. that even if you can't write a whole Sefer Torah, at least if you participate in purchasing a single letter in a Sefer Torah, that has consideration as if you wrote a Sefer Torah. And so that comes also from this idea as well. But now the question is, with regards to the Lokeach Sefer Torah min Ashuk, the person who Sefer Torah in the Shuk, why is that Kechotet Mitzvah min Ashuk? So Rashi over here says, the problem is that Kechotet Mitzvah, Mitzvah Avad, Rashi says you did do a Mitzvah, V'hikatava Mitzvah Yeteira Tfei. But if you write it yourself, it'll be even a greater Mitzvah. So Rashi reads it as, if you buy the Sefer Torah from the Shuk, that's an okay Mitzvah. But the Mitzvah min Amufkar is for you, for yourself to write the Sefer Torah. It's a Mitzvah Yeteira. The Rambam codifies it differently. Rambam says, you buy it from the Shuk, you're not Mekayim the Mitzvah at all. There is no Mitzvah. If you write it, then you get the Mitzvah of Ketivat Sefer Torah. If you hire a sofer, he's a shliach for you, so that's if you wrote it. But it's this week's parsha, V'atak Kitvu Lachem Et HaShira Zot. You need to write down this Shira, included in the Sefer Torah that you write. There's a demand that each Jew write a Sefer Torah. So the question is, why do you need to write a Sefer Torah? So there could be a number of reasons, and those reasons might impact here or influence what the halacha is. The one possibility is that we want you to write a Sefer Torah because we want you to be able to have something to learn from. So that case, for Rashi, that might be what's going on over here. You have a Sefer Torah. You purchase a Sefer Torah from the Shuk. You have a Sefer Torah to learn from. You write your own Sefer Torah. You also have a Sefer Torah to learn from. So in terms of a mitzvah, you're mekayim the mitzvah either way. Mitzvah in a mufkar is that you write it yourself, because the difference will be similar to the Gemara in the beginning of Bava Batra with regards to Batei Knesiot, that we don't want you taking down a Batei Knesiot before you put up a new Beit Knesset, because the number of Batei Knesiot in a city is an indication of the spiritual standing of the city. But similarly, with regards to Limud Torah, if you buy a Sefer Torah from the Shuk, you have not increased the number of Sifrei Torah that are available for learning. You've just bought one from someone and now taken it to yourself. If you write a Sefer Torah, now you've increased the capacity for learning or the ability for people to have Sifrei Torah. So that might be the way Rashi's reading it. The way that Rambam seems to be reading it is that the actual writing of the Sefer Torah is important. You need to write your own Sefer Torah so that you have a Sefer Torah. Doesn't have anything to do with learning the Sefer Torah. It means that you need to have a Sefer Torah with you. And that in itself is important, irrespective of learning from the Sefer Torah. And that way, if you buy it from the Shuk, lo kiyamta the mitzvah. You didn't get the mitzvah at all. You didn't write a Sefer Torah. That's the mitzvah. As opposed to, if you write it yourself, you get the mitzvah. That has a major nafkamina of what the Rosh says over here. The Rosh says that in today's world where we have Sfarim, whether they're printed or Sfarim that are written and plentiful, does that count as being a tukit v'ashir azot? Meaning that he says that buying a gemara, but today it doesn't mean just writing a Sefer Torah. It means you have to have a Mishnah, Gemara, Rishonim. You need to have all those things that make it possible for you to learn. It's clear that the Rosh is learning that the mitzvah is associated with learning Torah and not with the writing of the Sefer Torah. More along the lines of what we explained in Rashi, the importance is the learning. So if you have Sfarim that facilitate your ability to learn, he says you've accomplished the mitzvah of Ketivat Sefer Torah. The Beit Yosef is very bothered by this, and he says, how could it be that you're Mekayim the Mitzvah? Mitzvah says to write a Sefer Torah, and you're telling me you go buy some printed Sefer that you're going to be Mekayim the Mitzvah? And therefore, he says that what the Rosh meant was that in addition to writing a Sefer Torah, you need to buy these Sfarim. It's not enough today to just write a Sefer Torah, because then you get the Mitzvah of Ketivat Sefer Torah, but the aspect of learning, you don't get that just from Sefer Torah. You need the other Sfarim as well. So the Rosh, he says, is like a Chumrah, that you have to add on top of that requirement that you have to write a Sefer Torah. In addition to that, you must also buy Sfarim, as opposed to what seemingly the Pashtut or the Rosh is, that Rosh says that that's the mitzvah, is to buy Sfarim today, and you don't have to write a Sefer Torah. And that is until the Baruch Rebbe really pushed again to have people start writing Sefer Torah, it was very much the attitude of people was that, first of all, it was extremely expensive to write a Sefer Torah, and people, they really relied heavily on this Rosh by purchasing Sfarim for that mitzvah. And the Baruch Rebbe, through this Otachat idea, tried to bring back this idea of writing the Sefer Torah and people participating in the writing of Sefer Torah so that they could accomplish this mitzvah. All right, Tarabanan. Ose adam yiriya mibat shlosh dapim v'ad bat shmona dapim. You can have a yiriya, you can have a klaf that has three columns until eight columns. Pachot mikain, v'yeter alkein lo yaseh. Less than that, or more than that, you shouldn't do. But you can look in Rashi when he says, yeter alkein and pachot mikain, he says, the problems are, shetfarim shel chuberei yiriyot yafin ba, shein behem yoter midai, So Rashi says the first problem of making a yeriyah that is 3 to 8 columns is an average size yeriyah, and that works. If you do more than that or less than that, you run yourself into a problem, which is that either you're going to have a lot of stitching in there, or you're going to have very little stitching in there. Now, a lot of stitching already, you can understand what the problem is. If you're connecting many yeriyot, first of all, it doesn't look so good. And then there's more risk to things tearing, things becoming problematic over time. The other problem is that the Gemara Megillah says that when you roll a Sefer Torah, you have to roll it to a yiriyah. You have to roll it into a tefer of the yiriyot. So now, if you make the yiriyot extremely long, in order to roll it to that point and leave it there, you have to roll a significant amount. So you need to get some sort of average size that is reasonable to work with. That's what Rashi says in terms of why you have to have between 3 and 8 columns, which is below your bibidabim ibnation nirakia garret. You shouldn't make lots of columns because then it starts to look like a letter. So in a smaller, or if you have a normal sized cloth, and then you make more than a number of columns, you make a large number of columns, then what ends up happening is it starts to look like a letter rather than a columns, like fixed columns within there. Below your ma'at bidabim, you shouldn't diminish them ibnation nabin shotutot. It's hard to do the carriage return. When you go across the line, you're reading and it's a very, very wide daf, when you get to the end, to get back to the next line down, you're going to lose your place by the time you get down, because you have to leave that whole section and move back again to go. If it's a narrow, you are able to see in your vision, you can get both sides, it's easy to drop down a line. So that's the reason here. But then Rashi, in the next thing, is below your bebedapim, says, la'sot shmone beklaf im klaf katanhu. Don't make 8 when it's a small klaf. Not just 8 in general, it's 8 in a small klaf, mipnesha dapim tsarim. Because then each column is going to be very narrow and looks like an igaret. And lo yimayit bitapim lasod gimel imiriyag dola. If you have a very large. So he says we're not speaking about the same size of cloth. So Rashi seems to indicate there are two problems here. One problem is on your average cloth, you got to work with a cloth that's a yiriyah that can fit 3 to 8 standard columns. The reason for that is the stitching issue. Then separately, if I have a very narrow thing, don't make a lot of columns. Don't go to the extreme on the 8 side because then you're going to get very narrow columns. Or you have a very wide area, don't use 3 because then you're going to end up with columns that are too wide to work with. So it's two separate problems that Rashi discusses over here. Ella, so what's the proper width of a daf? Kagon, lemishpichotechem gimel pamim. The word lemishpichotechem, 3 times in a row, that's the standard width of a daf that you have. Here, the Rabbeinu Tam says, v'deinu perish betikun sefer Torah shelo, b'shem Rabbeinu Chananel, shemar b'shem ha-go'on, d'aynu she'aktiva daka, v'aktiva gasa ha-gol lefi anoy. It says, that's when you have very narrow lettering, that you use 3 mishpechotehem to determine how wide the column is. But he says, but if you have people who have much thicker writing, that's easier to discern the letters, then you can have the columns be a little wider than that. Yechol asot tapim mishitin arukim, denin ha-mishotutot, shekem she'aktiva gasa. The thicker the font, the easier it is then to read it when you drop down the lines, so then it's less important than the mishpechotayim. Nizdam alo yiriya bat teisha dapim. So using that as the benchmark for the dapim, for the columns, you get yourself a yiriya that has 9 columns, or space for 9 columns in it. Lo yachlok shalosh tekan v'sheish tekan. Don't divide it up into 3 and 6, cut the yiriya. Ela arba lekan v'chamesh tekan. Do it in a way that it's close to even. You want to try to keep it. Again, this is part of, I'll call it Zeke Livan Veyu. It's making the Torah look nice. Meaning that if you split it to 3 and 6, you have these different sizes here. If you do 4 and 5, it's not as discernible that there's a difference in the sizing. Babed, Dvarim Amorim, Mitzchilat HaSefer, that's at the beginning of the Sefer, meaning beginning of the Sefer all the way to the end. Aval, the Sofa Sefer, at the end of the Sefer, this is what we saw in the Shita Mekubeset before, Afilu Pasuk Echad, Afilu Daf Echad, you can even write 1 Pasuk or 1 Daf. To finish off the Sefer Torah, you don't have to finish it off on a yiriyah that has 3 columns at minimum on it. You can finish it off with 1 single column, or here the Gemara says even with a single pasuk. Gemara says, pasuk echad, sakadatcha? How are you going to fit a pasuk? Ela ema pasuk echad bidaf echad. You have a single pasuk that comes down a daf. The problem with pasuk echad is you need it to end at the bottom of the daf. We just said, you have to get to the sofa daf. So what are you doing about a pasuk echad? So pasuk echad, you can end in the middle of the daf. You're not going to accomplish what you need. So the Gemara answers, pasuk echad bidaf echad. You're going to create it so that the pasuk echad works its way down in a single column so that you end at the bottom. So then you have to adjust. Either you can write a single word per, or you can see, that's what he said. Even if you don't have 60 rows then, all the requirements of the Masechet Sofrim, how we align the Torah, Lek of the mechash b'daf acharon. And the last daf, all that goes out the window. The only thing you want to accomplish is to get it to the bottom of the daf. You need to get it to emsa shita, bottom of the daf. So that's what we're after. And therefore you can abrogate all the other rules of making the Sefer Torah. How many rows you have per column. How many columns you have per yiriya. And the size of the yiriya, all those are waived for the last one. Now, what they're speaking to over here in the Gemara is clear, which is that when you don't have a standardized way of writing Sifrei Torah, like we have today, which is that they print already the way to write it, someone's thought through all the problems that come up, which we're going to see coming up in the next parts over here, that all the problems that arise here arise from somebody writing freehand or freestyle. And because of that, you don't know where the words are going to end up. You don't know where the dapim are going to end up. It's much harder. Once we go to a standardized form, which is what we do today, they work it out when there are words that need to fit in on every line, when the words are longer, how to get things to work out in the columns. All of that's now preset because of the way that we have it. It's been standardized. So it makes it much easier to write today as a sofer. The questions that the Gemara are dealing with here are questions when you're writing without that type of standardization, then you run into these problems, including what we're talking about here. When you have a pasuk, you end up with one pasuk, you end up with something at the way end, and you got to get to the bottom of the daf. What am I going to do with that? And now we're going to see other issues that come up in that same vein. Shir Gilyon, the margin of the Sefer Torah. Shir Gilyon Milamata, Tefach. The bottom margin is the Tefach. Milamala, Gimel Etzvot, is three Etzvot. Ben Daf Le Daf, between the columns, Gimelei Rebach, Rochav Shtei Etzvot. You need two fingers width between the columns. Ubechumashim. So this is clearly the distinction between a Sefer Torah and a Chumashim. Here, a Chumashim doesn't mean a Chumash in a Sefer Torah. It means Chumashim, which are these cloth that only have one Chumash in it. Milamata shlosh etzbot, then you only need three in the margin below. Milamala shtei etzbot, two etzbot above. Ben daf le daf, milo revach rochab gudal. You just need a thumb's width below, so the margins are smaller in the chumashim. Ben shita le shita, milo shita. So between each row, you have to leave a spacing. It's like almost like a double spacing. You have a line written, a blank line, and then another line written. You leave like a full line's height between each line. That helps you for a number of reasons, because you have letters like the Lamed that rise up above, and then you have letters like the Nun, Sofit, that drop down. So leaving that space gives you the ability to do it without running into letters. There are problems in the Sefer Torah when you have the two of those meeting. We have a Lamed going up and a Nun coming down. And that's why today these standardized types of tikkunim try to avoid that problem as much as possible, or alert you to the fact that you might run into that problem. So they do it, they paginate it in a way that you try to avoid most of those problems where you're going to have a letter rising above and below the line and meeting up and causing you to have to shift the letter so it doesn't look. You see older Sifrei Torah, sometimes you can see they have to bend the Lamed or bend the Nun a little bit to avoid touching the letter below. Today, they try to, the way it's paginated, you don't run into most of those problems along the way. A person should not shrink the font size. Lomi pnei revach shel mato. Not to make sure that the margin down below is that size. But let me pay revach shomata mala, not for the margin up top. Let me pay revach shben shita the shita, not again to preserve the spacing between the lines. But let me pay revach shben parsha the parsha, and not for the space between a parsha ptucha and a parsha stuma. So then it seems here, and that's what Rashi seems to read it, is that you can forego some of these issues. If a person did a sirtut in a way where he didn't leave a full line's worth in between, you don't shrink the letters in order to get it to work. You write regular letters, and you're just going to have a smaller space in between. You're going to have a smaller margin. He reaches the end of a line, and now he's got a word that's five letters long. You can't use hyphenation in the Torah to continue down below. Now you have a problem. You have a five-letter word. What are you going to do? Lo yichtov shtayim betoch hadaf. Don't write two inside the column frame. V'shalosh chutz ledaf. And then three outside of it. So this is something that we don't say at all in our Sifrei Torah. But in an older Sifrei Torah, they used to break the margin lines. Which is that when you're dealing with a column, you can't always get it right, and you're going to end up with spacing that you don't want or words. So you're allowed to extend out of the margin line of the columns in order to accomplish that. But that's only true where the way the Gemara says is if you have two letters in and three out, you cannot do it. But the other way you can, Ella, you can have it this way, Shalosh betoch hadaf, if three within the columns margin, v'shtayim chutz ledaf, but two are outside of the daf, that's okay. That's fine. The question here is, what is the Gemara after? Is the Gemara after rove, have to be inside the column, and only the minority can be outside, because you have a five-letter word, and saying you can't have three out, you can have two out? Or is the Gemara saying you can have a maximum of two letters out? So that is actually the machloket within the Rishonim, as to which way it goes. the Rabbeinu Tam says over here, the shame, tzarech shei kulo b'tocha daf. The shame Hashem, you can't have it hang out the side. It's got to be completely within the column frame. So it's an important halacha, which is that there is much more flexibility than we actually think in terms of what to do when you run out of space or you have problems here. And we're going to see that here again. This is all when you're writing freestyle. You're going to run into these types of problems about dropping words, and they have words that are too long for the line. You didn't space it right. If you have a word that is two letters long, now you just told me you could put two letters past the frame of the column. So what are you going to say? I have a word that's two letters long. I'll just put it outside the frame of the column. That you can't do. You got to drop down to the next line and write it within the frame of the column. So just because we permit you to run over two letters, that's only when it's part of a larger word. If it's two letters that are just by themselves, a standalone word, then you have to drop down. Now, because it says here, Choser v'kotev, it's k'lata shita, some note here that the Choser v'kotev is significant. Over here, it didn't say you have two letters. What do you mean Choser v'kotev? You didn't write them to start with. Some people indicate that this is from the word like a word like Avraham. You have five letters in the word. And if you have Avraham, the latter two letters, hey, mem, sofit, are a standalone word. So if you start Avraham with the three letters, then you push the two letters out into past the frame of the column, that would be problematic because now you have a standalone word that has meaning by itself outside of the column. So we don't want that. Then Choser b'kotev. You got to drop down and rewrite the whole word Avraham starting on the next line. But you can see that in the Shita Mekubetz at Od Aleph. He brings that alternate view because he says Rashi's explanation over here doesn't make so much sense because of the Choser b'kotev. What does it mean that he writes it again? He wouldn't write anything to start with. There was two letters that were a word that he never wrote. So he says that it has to do with this word like Avraham, where the latter two letters are a word by itself. So he says there, Ela Choser b'kotev Avraham kulo b'rosh shita. Write the entire word on the bottom line, which sounds like he already started the three letters of the word, and then he has to write it again below. Again, that's strange, because then you run yourself into problems of having extra letters here. Hatoeh b'shem, what happens if you make a mistake with the Shem Hashem? Gorer et mashe katav. You scrape away what you wrote. Etoleh et mashe garar. And then you hang over that which you erased. So what happened here is that you left out the Shem Hashem. And you wrote a word that was kulin, but the Shem Hashem is missing. You need to insert the Shem Hashem. How do you insert the Shem Hashem? So you can make the Shem Hashem the insertion, which means it's equivalent to having a carrot and writing the Shem Hashem above, in between the lines. Or you can erase one of the words, put the Shem Hashem where it belongs, and then hang the word above the line. And that's what he's saying here. That what you do is, Rabbi Yehuda says, we want the Shem Hashem to be in line with the line frame, but we allow the insertion of something above. So you have a choice. Do we insert the Shem Hashem above, or do we erase, which is a problem, because it's not going to be as, it's not going to be as pretty. You're going to erase it, write the Shem Hashem, and be told that the chulin above. So that's how Rabbi Yehuda says you do it. We tell you better to be gorer than it is to put the Shem Hashem and hang the Shem Hashem above. Again, here you see clearly that's a fine way to write here is to hang the words in between. Like I have a carrot and words on top. Again, you don't see this in Sifrei Torah, but it's acceptable. Rabbi Yosef Omer, I've told him at the shame. You can even hang the shame up above. Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, af mochek v'kotev. Not only can you do this, you can erase and write. Now Rashi says the difference between mochek and garar is mochek is when the ink is still wet, you can erase the ink. On the other hand, when it's already dry, the only way to get it out is to be gorer, is to scrape it off. So that's how Rashi determines the difference. And Rashi seems to indicate that gorer is a little nicer. When you do mochek, it makes it much messier because you're dealing with this wet ink. You're going to leave some sort of blackening in the background, and when you write on top of it, it's not going to be as pretty. The question is, if you have the word af, af seems to be additive. So if you read the Braita in its simple form, the Talmid Tosfot point this out, first Rabbi Yehuda says, gorer. You should scrape it off. Then Rabbi Yossi comes along and says, af toleh. Not only can it be gorer, you can also be toleh, which means toleh is below garar. Then Rabbi Yossi comes along and says, af mochek. Even, you can even do something worse, but that would give you that there's a hierarchy. The best thing to do is gorer. The next best thing to do is toleh. The worst thing to do is mochek. And each one of them is saying af, because it's adding on to that which was said before. So Bali Tosfot point that out, that it sounds like from this, that you have a hierarchy. Mashma lechora, the gorera deep mikulu. But toleh, gara mine, umuklei gara mi toleh. Aval, ef shalom arkein. That he can't say this. El Rabbi Yitzchak ad Rabbi Yehuda koi. Rabbi Yitzchak's statement at the end when he says, ach mochei b'kotev, It's not referencing off of Rabbi Yossi's position, it's referencing back to Rabbi Yehuda's position. The law of Rabbi Yossi, the tole, gara mi mochek. The worst thing to do is to hang it in the middle. Best thing to do is gorer, according to Tosva. Next best thing is mochek. And then the last thing, the worst thing to do is be tole. And he bases it on Yerushalmi over here. But then, Rabbeinu Tam Perish, the tolim adif mikulu. It's the exact opposite view of the Bali Tosafo. Bali Tosafo says, the tole is the worst. Rabbeinu Tam says, it's the best. Rabbi Yossi, below goris af tolin. He leaves out the word af over here. Uman de posik alocha tolin, kasaber, dafka tolin. Person has to say af, he means tolin and not any of the other options. Below mochek mikotev. You can't do anything else. Vechein posik Rabbeinu Tam. Aval Eif Shalom Arkein. Tosafo says you can't say that because of the Yushami. And other reasons that he brings over here that indicate the Rabbeinu Tam's wrong. So here you have a machloket in the Rishonim is to how to read the sequencing of the best way to deal with this. According to Rabbeinu Tam, the best way to deal with it is Tolin. According to Bali Tosafot, the best way is Gorer. And then after that is Mochek. And then after that is Tolet. And the way Argmar reads simply, that the hierarchy would have been Gorer, Tolet, and then Mochek. But that obviously makes a difference when you have to come to rectify something. How do you deal with rectifying the problem? Rabbi Shimon Zuri Omer, Kol Hashem Kulo Tolim Miksato Eno Tolim. Shem Zuri says you can put a whole Shem Hashem above, but you can't put part of a Shem Hashem above the line. Rabbi Shem Elazar Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir Ein Kodvim Hashem Lo Makom Agrar Lo Makom Machak Vein Tolin Oto. Now you have a statement from Rabbi Shem Ben Elazar in the name of Rabbi Meir. Can't do any of this. The Shem Hashem has to be done in a way of kavod, and that means you can't put it on an erase part. You can't put it on something that was scraped away, and you can't hang it. Ketzad Oseh, Misaleket Iriya Kulav Gonza. There's your answer. It's going into Geniza. Messed up with the Shem Hashem. If you didn't write it here, and you're trying to insert it afterwards, or if you wrote it improperly, why not? It's going to end up in Geniza. You can't erase the Shem Hashem. And here, where you're erasing to put the Shem Hashem in, it's not going to be Kavod to the Shem Hashem. Goes into Geniza. So if you have more than three columns in the Yiriyah, then you could slice the actual column off and put it into Geniza. If you're working with a Yiriyah that has only three columns in it, you can't slice off a column because then you're below the minimum number of columns. If you gonaze the entire Yiriyah, again, the way we write today, it really ends up every time you have to gonaze the whole Yiriyah because we keep them all standard sizes. They don't have different size Yiriyot there where you have some three columns, some four columns. You're going to have a standardized size. If you have to cut a slice of column off, he's probably going to throw out the whole year, yeah. All right. Itmar, Rav Chanan al-Marav, Alocha tolin et Hashem. He says, Alocha is that you can't be tolin et Hashem. Rav Chanan, Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel, Alocha mochek v'kotev. Better to erase and write. V'leima, mar halocha kemar, or mar halocha kemar. Why don't you say, the Alocha is like, and again, you can pick here, it's either Rabbi Yitzchak, who says mochek v'kotev, or it's Rabbi Yossi, who says tolin. Why don't they say that the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi, or the Alocha is like Rabbi Yitzchak? Why are they just saying the halacha is? The Gemara says the apchilu. There are different Tanaic works which flip the positions around. So they want to be clear about what the halacha does without giving attribution to who said the halacha. Amar Avin Bar Chinin Amar Ulam Rabbi Chanina halacha Rabbi Shimon ben Zuri. So you have a different view here. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Zuri. You got to throw it out. Goes into Geniza if you don't get it right. Below Od Elakoma Kom Shoshana Rabbi Shimon ben Zuri halacha Kemoto. Not only over here is the halacha like him, but anywhere he found in Shas the halacha is like him. Ahai. Upon which member of Rabbi Shimon ben Zuri was this said? Ilei Mamaha, Rabbi Shimon ben Zuri Omer, Kol Hashem Kulo Tolin, Miksato Ein Tolin, that which we found in the bright that we saw above, Vayit Marala, didn't we just have a list of Amoraim over here who said, Amar Rabbanan Amar Rav Alocha Tolin et Hashem, Rav Barchana Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Alocha Mochek Mikotev, we had them indicating who the Alocha is like, Vimita Hu Nam Ilema, if that was the case, he should have been in that series of Amoraim saying the Alocha is like. The fact that this is brought totally separately indicates that it has to be said about something, but you didn't have a list of Amoraim who are giving their opinions, because then it should be included in the list. The fact that it's absent from that list indicates it wasn't said about this. Elaha, it must be on this. Rabbi Shimon Zeir Omer, Afilu Ben Chamesh Shanim, V'choresh Basadeh, Shkitat Imo, Mitarato. He's talking about a Ben Pakua, where you shechted the mother and the baby was in utero at the time, but survives the Shkita. That Ben Pakua is Nitar Yidei Shkitat Imo. So Rabbi Shimon ben Zuri says, even if the animal's out there plowing the fields, he's always got a Shem ben Pakua, and he doesn't need a Shechita. The Shechita of his mother took care of him. The problem with saying that that's where this was said is we already have the Amoraim who give their opinion. Again, if that's said here, why isn't it said along with this memra of the Amoraim? Elaha must be on this Mishnah. Vishuna yomrim ayotze bekolar v'mar katuvo get liishti. If a person is being taken out to be executed, right, it says to 280 dim, write a get for my wife. Hariel yichtuvo v'itno. Not only should they write it, they should write it and give it to them. Chazur lomar afa mifareish v'yotze b'shaira. It said not only that, but even someone who's going traveling a long distance, mifareish layam v'yotze b'shaira. He's taking a long distance trip. He says write a get. He means write the get and give it to my wife. He's trying to protect his wife from Yibum if something happens. And so he's tarud. He's bogged down with what he's dealing with on the trip. Therefore, when he says write, he means write and give. Even though he should have said it, write and give. That's what he meant to say. Shemazuri omer afa misukan. Anybody who's in any danger, here it might be he's running away from the authorities, the tax authorities, whatever he's doing, whatever he's in some sort of danger, this applies. If he says write it, it means write it and give it. Inami aha. Or maybe it's said about this. Trumat maser shel demai. We're dealing with demai, shechazra lemkoma, it goes back, falls back into what you separated it from. So now you have a big problem. You took off shumat maser, and it falls back in. Even on a weekday, you can ask him about it and eat it. So the beginning of the mission, what you're missing here, is that on Shabbat, if it's Shabbat, and now you bought produce from an Am Haaretz, and you have nothing to eat. So the oneg of Shabbat, if we let you eat this, then you're in good shape. If you can't eat this, the guy's going to be starving all of Shabbat. Now, the chashash of demai is that we worry possibly that the Am Haaretz didn't take off Trumot Masrot. But we know that there is a chazakah that Rov Am Haaretz are Masrim. Most Am Haaretz did take off Trumot and Masrot. May not be a strong majority, but it's at least a majority. And therefore, over here, Chazal gave dispensation on Shabbat to go and ask the Am Haaretz, did you take off Trumot Masrot? And we believe him. Yushami, as the Beit Tosafot adds another dimension to that, which is Emat HaShabbat Alav, that the Am Haaretz is afraid of Shabbat, never he won't lie on Shabbat. So not only is it unique to Shabbat because of Oneg Shabbat, it's also unique to Shabbat because he has the Emat HaShabbat. Soon as Motzei Shabbat comes, you're not allowed to eat it anymore because you've lost the Oneg Shabbat, and the Emat HaShabbat doesn't help you. It means that if you ask the Am Haaretz on a weekday, it's not going to help you either because he doesn't have Emat HaShabbat. So then the next part of that Mishnah is, what happens to a case where you took off Trumat Maser and fell back in? At that point, there's nothing that you can do to solve the problem. Ellen Kane, you find out whether you took off Trumat Masrot. So Rabbi Shimon Ziri says, in that situation, you can even ask the Am Haaretz during a weekday about it, because otherwise, this is going to be useless. It's all going to be thrown out because you can't do anything. The Trumat Maser that fell back into it because you can't separate them anymore. So Rabbi Shimon Ziri says, when it falls back in, you can ask him even on a weekday, and we believe him in that situation in order to solve the problem. Yushami again adds on the dynamic that Emat HaDimua Ela Alav, that Am Haaretz are afraid of Truma and Trumat Maser because they know there's a Chiyuv Mita Dei B'Shamayim and they won't lie about that. So they add in that dimension of Ema is why we also believe them in that case. So that's where Rabbi Shimon Ziri Omer, Af B'Chol Sholo B'Chlo Abiv, Va'it Mar Alah. And again here we have a member of Amoraim, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha Ki Rabbi Shimon Ben Zuri B'Misukan U'B'Mitruat Maser Shel Demai. As long as I live in Zuri in these two cases. Bimita Hanami Lema. Again, if that's the case, why isn't this listed amongst the Memorot of Amoraim? Why is it absent over here? Elaha. It's on this case. Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur Omer Mishum Rabbi Zuri. Pula Mitzri. Shizaro the Zera. You planted this legume for its seeds. Not to be eaten, but for seeding. Mixato Yishrish Lifnei Rosh Hashanah. Part of it rooted before Rosh Hashanah. Mixato Achar Rosh Hashanah. And part of it after Rosh Hashanah. One is from last year's produce, and one's from next year's produce. You can't mix the 2 years' produce together. So you have to take off Shumat Masrot for every year separately. The reason it matters for seeding is because if it was for vegetation for eating, then it goes Bata L'Kita. It has to be when you pick it. So then they would all be picked at the same time. It wouldn't matter. Problem here is that it's not being used for that. It's used for its seeds. Then it goes after Hashrasha. It has to do when it roots in the ground. You can't mix different years Trumot and Masrot. You have to take off separately from each year's produce. So what do you do? What you do is you mix it well, and then since you've mixed it well, then when you take off, basically you're getting a statistical sample from it. So that when you mix it well, yes, you can have a mix of new and old, but when you take off whatever it is you take off, the Truma and the Maser, each one of those will be a statistical sample of the mix, and therefore you're getting the right ratio of Chadash and Yashan. That's a suggestion of Rabbi Shimon ben Shizuri. Hayit Marla. Once again, we have a problem here. Amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmani. Amar, there's a question here about the Girsa, whether it should be Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yonatan. Halacha ka Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. Once again, we have an Amora saying halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. Vimita hunami lema. That's the case. Why isn't this memra brought, included in the memra of Amoraim over here? We're looking for a statement of Rabbi Shimon Zuri where no Amoraim make a statement, and then on that, we want him to say, Amoravim Barchin, Amarula, Amarabichanin, Aloch, Rabbi Shimon Zuri, Veloot. Not only that, but we have to find a place where we have nobody telling us that Aloch is like Rabbi Shimon Zuri. So far, we have yet to find that. We're going to stop here on the last line of Lamed Amabet. And we will continue tomorrow with other suggestions as to where we find this Rav Shimon ben Shizuri.